Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The first 5 days of the Trump administration have been eventful, to say the least. The new president has barely put his pen down, signing executive orders on TPP, pipelines, Obamacare, infrastructure projects, and more. Today, he's expected to sign one to build that wall with Mexico. Okay, no surprises there, but what about claims of alternative facts and massive illegal voting? False, without evidence. Over the weekend, protesters marched on Washington. We heard them loud and clear. But what about Trump voters? What are they thinking now? We're asking this hour in our On Point 100 Day Spotlight, President Trump supporters on the Trump rollout and what they want to see now. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Trump voters, Trump supporters, do you like what you see so far from the president, from his team? Is he setting the right tone? What do you hope it will produce? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It has been a busy time. Here was President Trump on Monday with a bunch of CEOs in the White House saying he wanted to reduce taxes for the middle class and for American business.
What we're doing is we are going to be cutting taxes massively for both the middle class and for companies. And that's massively. We're trying to get it down to anywhere from 15 to 20%.
We'll see where the tax cuts fall. On the same day, three executive orders, one of which pulled the U.S. out of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Here's President Trump.
Everyone knows what that means, right? We've been talking about this for a long time. Thank you. Okay. Great thing for the American worker.
And here, just yesterday, President Trump putting the Dakota Access Pipeline back on the table.
This is with respect to the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. Dakota Access Pipeline. Again, subject to terms and conditions to be negotiated by us.
President Trump in action. What do his supporters think so far? The first days of the Trump presidency, we have Trump voters from around the country with us today. With us from Joplin, Missouri, is Yvonne Roskowski, 44 years old, one daughter, a realtor there, Trump supporter. Yvonne Roskowski, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Very happy to have you with us from Missouri.
Thank you.
From Oklahoma City, Larry Stein joins us. 60, divorced, three kids, longtime political operative who helped end years of Democratic Party dominance in Oklahoma, helped turn it into one of the reddest of red states. Larry Stein, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Indianapolis is Denise Moe. She's 39, divorced, two teenage boys, a Trump backer in the election season. Denise Moe, welcome to On Point from Indianapolis.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you here. Denise, what do you think of the president so far? How do you like his first days out of the gate?
Well, I am from the state of Indiana, and we were lucky enough to be the state that pushed Donald Trump over the edge in the primary, securing him the nomination of the party. And I was fortunate enough to be able to attend three live rallies with Mr. Trump. So I was able to hear him in person, live, three times. And it was wonderful. I've never been paid to do politics, but I've been a lifelong volunteer for the last 20 years. So I've heard hundreds of political speeches, and there was nothing like hearing Mr. Trump speak. He spoke off the cuff for 2 hours, no teleprompter, no notes. He was real. He resonated with people. You know, what he had to say wasn't always the most eloquent, but he really spoke to a lot of people. He spoke to the country as a whole. And now that he's President Trump, he's the same person. He is there to work. He's not there to have fun. He's not there to mess around. He's not there to make political allies or to give his cronies favors or deals. He's putting his pen to the paper. He's getting to work, and he is doing what he said he would do.
We've got one more guest I want to introduce this hour, and stand by there, Denise, in Indianapolis from Washington.
Sure.
Ginger Gibson is with us. She's national political correspondent for Reuters, who covered the Trump campaign and many of his supporters from the very beginning. Ginger Gibson, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Ginger, stand by there in Washington. Yvonne, you're listening in from Joplin, Missouri. Denise says, you know, she got out to three Trump rallies during the campaign. She liked what she heard, and she hears the same thing now from President Trump. It sounds as though she's pleased about that. There had been some conversation, as you must have heard, Yvonne, that, well, yeah, he was pretty raw, pretty raucous on the campaign trail, but once he gets into the White House, he'll be a different kind of guy. Maybe not so much late-night tweeting, maybe not so much, you know, off the cuff. A lot of commentary is saying that's not happening. He's the same in the White House as he was on the campaign trail. Do you welcome that, Yvonne, or not?
I fully expected Donald Trump to be Donald Trump. I didn't think he was going to put on airs. I didn't think he was going to pretend to be presidential. I think he says what he thinks, sometimes to his detriment, and I think that he does mean what he says.
Does the country need him to be presidential at this point, now that he is president, or...
I don't believe so. I believe that Donald Trump was elected because he's Donald Trump. I believe his brash, maybe not filtered persona was embraced. Obviously, he got elected. I think that people want to hear what he thinks, even though sometimes what he thinks isn't necessarily what everybody wants to hear. I think he needs to continue to do what he does. He has said he's going to take on the economy, and that's what he's doing. He said he's going to take on immigration, and that's what he's doing. I think he wants to bring jobs to this country, and that's what he's doing. He's so far, I believe, followed through.
Larry Stein, you're listening in there in Oklahoma City. What do you think of the new president's first 4 or 5 days here?
Well, I like it, and the best part about Donald Trump is that he's not afraid to take on the media. For the longest time, George W. Bush just let the Democrats kick him in the shorts every morning and didn't say anything back. And I like that refreshing note of a Republican that's going to fight for the things that I believe in. I do have a problem with sometimes Trump is suffering from what appears to be an ADD, where he doesn't focus on things. He starts talking about extraneous things like what happened at the CIA the other day. He's just got to get some notes, and somebody's got to keep him on him, because I want him to be precise in his message. And when you're starting to talk about other things, extraneous things, it drives me crazy. And I wish he'd learn how to talk from a teleprompter, too, because he doesn't do a really good job at that.
Was it the message at the CIA that bothered you, or just the fact that he was kind of rambling off script there?
I don't know if there was a script, and I think that's the problem. You know, some note cards to focus on what he was there for, talking about other things and deals and the crowd and everything else. I don't care about that, and I don't think anybody at the CIA cared about that. And I think he just needs to focus on those issues that he wants to talk about instead of rambling. It's the hardest thing to do for a politician, to tell them to focus on something, because they think, hey, I'm the smartest guy in the room now. Didn't I get elected? And you got to calm them down and focus on the four things you want to talk about instead of just letting them ramble, because it drives me nuts and it drives the media crazy, too.
I want to come back and look at that issue. Denise, you went to the rallies. You liked what you heard. What do you want from the Trump administration?
Absolutely everything that was already mentioned. I'm very excited about the economy. The economy is the key to every other issue. If we get Americans back to work, lower unemployment, if we keep manufacturing, industry, and factories in America, if we have trade deals with other countries that, you know, are not a detriment to our economy, if we don't let our companies move overseas and then ship their products back, gaining their income from America, I really feel that even in the last 30 to 40 years, a lot of the policies of previous presidents have been to be the babysitter, policeman, helper of the world, and not focused on America, America first. So the economy is key to everything, getting people back to work, getting, you know, medium income up, middle class tax cuts. Once the economy is thriving, people are working, they'll be able to purchase goods and services, and that has a direct correlation to crime rate, education, everything else. So once we fix the economy, and I believe in that its government's basic job is to provide a wonderful climate for businesses to thrive, to make a good climate for the economy. I'm all for personal liberty and autonomy, but that is government's basic job, is to foster a good business climate. That's the key to helping everything else that ails our country.
I mean, you know that liberty comes first sort of in our founding documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, before the economy, but you're willing to... Are you saying put those things aside or put them in the back seat, or am I over?
Oh, no. My point was, I don't want I would describe myself as a social moderate, or socially, I want my private life to be private.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want the government involved in all aspects. I don't want the government regulating my personal life or having that much to do with social policy. But the way to fix or improve a lot of other things that ail our society is by us having a robust economy. I believe that, you know, the economy and economics is one of government's main responsibilities, including national defense and infrastructure, not all the little either special interest programs or the nickel and diming or the little, you know, group social issues. So I tend to be very much a business economic Republican.
Denise, stand by there in Indianapolis. Ginger Gibson, you're in Washington. You talked with lots of Trump supporters, I'm sure, on the campaign trail during the election season. Now it's Trump administration time, and you're hearing from Denise and Larry and Yvonne what they see, how they see the start. Any surprises for you here, Ginger?
I was surprised a little bit to hear some division, maybe not the right word, but differing takes on his tone and how he's talking publicly. I think that in the Beltway, in the political world, for a long time we've been saying that none of the rules apply to Donald Trump, that he can say and do whatever he wants, and that the normal rules of politics don't apply. It'll be interesting to see sort of defied gravity, and is gravity going to catch up with him? Do folks say, I'm totally fine with him continuing to talk that way, like we heard Yvonne say, or we hear more folks like Larry who say, get a teleprompter and get on message. I think one of the remarkable things that this week is that Donald Trump walked in the White House and started doing all of the things he promised he was going to do, and then started a fight about crowd numbers that have largely distracted from it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour with Trump supporters about how they see the opening days of the Trump administration, how they see the way forward under President Donald Trump. Denise Moe is with us from Indianapolis, Larry Stein from Oklahoma City, Yvonne Raskowski from Joplin, Missouri. Ginger Gibson is with us as well, national political correspondent for Reuters. She covered the Trump campaign, talked with a lot of Trump backers during those many weeks and months. Listeners, you can join us as well. 5 days in, what do you think of the Trump trajectory? Trump fans, Trump supporters, what do you want out of the next 4 years? And is the new president setting the right tone, focusing on the right things right out of the gate? Here he was this week, early this week, talking with business leaders, saying, hey, if American companies want to move factories abroad, they will pay to bring their goods back to the USA.
So a company that wants to fire all of its people in the United States and build some factory someplace else, and then thinks that that product is going to just flow across the border into the United States, that's not going to happen. They're going to have a tax to pay, a border tax, a substantial border tax.
Larry Stein, you were listening. I'm sure you're thinking about this. You've been a very active Republican for a long time. You know Republican orthodoxy has been free trade. Now Donald Trump is intervening in a very direct way, even company by company, saying, watch out, we're going to block you, we're going to tax you. How do you feel about that, Larry? It's a change in Republican orthodoxy. Does it work for you?
Well, because the issue was free and fair. And what happened is that the United States was being penalized when we sent our gold, our products to other countries, but those countries could subsidize their products and compete with us. The one example would be the price of cars from Japan, because the government subsidized their health care and the United Auto Workers were having to have the auto companies subsidize or pay a portion of their costs, and it was more expensive that way, having the auto workers pay for it out of their checks. So, you know, the idea is not, it's not trying to be unfair, it's trying to be fair to all parties. And for the longest time, the United States has been getting the brunt of the deal, and huge markets like China have been undercutting our prices because they subsidize those things through their government.
So you think he's right in kind of making American companies captive here with tariff or you know, border tax threat? Does that work for you?
Well, it's something that needs to be addressed, because if we don't, then we're going to still have a flood of market and our jobs going overseas, because those countries can subsidize and undercut the cost of labor over there. So I think it'll help create greater economic opportunities here. And one of the other things nobody's mentioned yet is the Unaffordable Health Care Act. I mean, that's the thing that's a huge tax on individuals and business and created a bloated bureaucracy that we need to fix.
Well, what about, Yvonne, what about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, as it's often called? A lot of people got health insurance under that. People with pre-existing conditions, people's kids were able to get on and stay on health care. How do you feel about the opening moves on that front, Yvonne?
Frankly, I didn't get on board with the Affordable Care Act until I was taxed into doing so. I'm a very healthy person. I'm a very active person. I go to my doctor once a year. It was costing me more to buy insurance than any health care I was taking advantage of.
Yeah.
And so when I finally got the tax penalty became greater than what the cost would be, that's when I finally got on and went to the marketplace, and I got insurance and I agree, the Unaffordable Care Act.
I mean, it's great when you're healthy, but what happens when you're not? Are you confident that under President Trump and the Republican Congress, there's going to be good, solid health care for all the Americans who are covered now?
I don't know what will happen when it's repealed, quite frankly. Like mm-hmm. I said, I was taxed into doing it.
Mm-hmm. And that made you an Obamacare user, but not necessarily a fan. We've got callers from around the
country. And it's gone up. It's gone up every year.
Callers from around the country for all three of you and Ginger Francisco in Miami, Florida. Francisco, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm okay.
I'd like to call because I just want to say that President Trump has kind of turned the office into a TV reality show. He's got us all hugged. We either love him or we hate him. But besides that, I did vote for him. I think he's going to do good things for the country. And I hope he does some good things in the long term, not just some short-term things. Thank you.
I appreciate your call, Francisco. Denise, Francisco voted for President Trump, but he sounds a little concerned. He says he's turning the presidency into a reality TV show. What do you say, Denise?
Well, I have to give President Trump accolades. I do think he is a marketing genius. He came from no prior political office. He came as a successful businessman, and he beat a field of 10 other very successful previous office holders, governors, senators, congressmen. He beat a field of 10 high-profile political Republicans. He did a great job. He understands the modern world, social media. He's a marketing genius. I absolutely think he did what he did, and he was so successful. And whatever he sets his mind to, he has a good pulse on the country, excellent negotiator, surrounds himself with the best people. And, you know, I was proud of him that he won in such a large field of qualified candidates. So I think that definitely sets the tone that he's a winner and he will do the job. He'll do what it takes to get the job done. And he will absolutely put forth that much effort and that much realism into absolutely getting our country back on track, making our economy better.
Yeah, Larry Stein, Donald Trump talks a lot about being a winner, talks a lot about winning. Of course, once you're president, you're responsible for a lot of things, including lots of American values embedded in our founding documents and in our the progress we've made in our history. Francisco in Miami is worried about the reality show feeling sometimes. Does this all fit together for you, Larry?
I think Francisco's right, and I think it's great that the Trump administration is turning the office of the president and our government into a reality, because it is the biggest reality show. It has the most impact on our lives every day, and by bringing people into the process that may have never been interested in these things before, I mean, there may have been a whole lot of executive orders that were filed in the first 5 days of a previous administration or actions by a president-elect, but I can never remember any substantial things as much like the carrier deal, the AFL-CIO coming out and saying we support this president, the executive orders on the pipeline, all of those things. That's bringing America into the Oval Office, and that's my office. I paid for that. That's my house.
I got the
guy there getting me involved.
Yeah, I got that. But let me ask you this: in a reality TV show, Francisco brings it up from Miami. You know, it's just TV. You can sort of say whatever it takes to win or to draw viewers. What about keeping things accurate and keeping things real in that way, factual in the White House, Larry? There's been a lot of concerns raised about that in recent days.
You know, the alternative facts are the facts that are usually ignored by the mainstream media. I mean, the press secretary said that the most people viewing it online and in person, and apparently the media didn't like that. So that's okay. But when you're trying to correct the record, like the instance with the bust of Martin Luther King, That was a factual mistake.
They corrected that. But they didn't apologize
to the president.
Well,
and I think that's
he's not a king. He's not a king. They corrected the record. This is the American media, not right.
But he's not a monarch. After the story, that's the story that went out, and there wasn't any apology offered. There was a say, "Oh, we're sorry, we did that," but there wasn't any.
Well, there was regret expressed and a correction made. Isn't that the American way? We're not kneeling at the foot of a king here.
The apologies from newspapers usually are. Reporters usually appear on page 55, on the front page.
I mean, that's okay.
That's fine. I know that the mainstream media just doesn't like Republicans or conservatives, and that's okay.
I think you're taking an easy way out there. I'm going to put Mike Huckabee on with you, Larry. Republican, of course, former Arkansas governor, ran for president, was on Fox Business News. He was talking about President Trump, his repeatedly debunked claim that millions of immigrants who voted illegally cost him the popular vote in November. Here's Mike Huckabee.
I have no evidence whatsoever, and I don't know that anyone does, that there were that many illegal people who voted. And frankly, it doesn't matter. He's the president, and whether 20 million people voted, it doesn't matter anymore. He's the president, and I'm not sure why he brought it up.
Yvonne Rutkowski, in Joplin, of course, there can be tensions, you know, between presidents and media. There have been for a long time. But what about the issue of accuracy? Are you worried about that, about keeping things factual out of the White House?
I believe that he is speaking from what he believes, and he was willing to at least, he's going to look into the voter issues, what are the number of voters or the fraudulent voters, which has been a question for many, many elections, not just this one. I think it's a bit of an insecurity of his that he didn't win the popular vote, and I think he'll get over it, frankly.
I wonder, because he's just announced this new investigation today. He says a big investigation into voter fraud, though the elements that he talks about are really outdated voter rolls, not the same thing. Lindsey Graham was talking about that yesterday, and I want to get your reaction to this, Denise and Yvonne, Larry. Senator Graham, Republican, of course, South Carolina, said that President Trump needs to stop obsessing over what he's called voter fraud, said it undermines his ability to lead the nation. Here's Senator Graham.
If the President of the United States is claiming that three to three and a half million people voted illegally, that shakes confidence in our democracy. He needs to disclose why he believes that. I don't believe that. It is the most inappropriate thing for the president to say without proof. Al Gore walked away based on 500 or 600 votes. Richard Nixon lost a very close election. We're talking about a man who won the election and seems to be obsessed with the idea that he could not have possibly lost the popular vote without cheating and fraud.
Republican Lindsey Graham there, worried about the president's obsession on this front. He calls it obsession. Melissa in Terre Haute, Indiana, not so far from Denise there. Melissa, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wanted to call and talk about the fact that I am really concerned about, and especially this election cycle has brought to the forefront, the biased media, politically biased media. And it has just been so politically biased that it has become it's no longer a credible news source to me and to a lot of people. And
do you say that, Melissa, when the media is trying to figure out what's factual and what's not? Do you see that as bias?
Throughout the whole election and throughout and now after the election, it is just completely obvious that it is politically biased. And we need to find out why that is going on. And it's obvious to a lot of people that there's a narrative, and it's coming from a group that is controlling the narrative that gets out to us through the media. And we really need to address that issue. It's a source of stress now because it's so politically biased that it's not credible.
But don't we need an independent media to really pay attention to what any president is doing, Melissa, including President Trump?
We do need an independent, and I mean independent in meaning the fact that they aren't politically biased. And it's just been, and it's really been brought to the forefront with this election. I mean, it's just very clear that it is politically biased, towards, you know, one to the Democrats and to the liberal narrative. And you and the whole, you can see it happening and you can hear it, and it's just very stressful to the American citizens, to us, to have to listen to such bias.
Melissa, I appreciate your call. Let me take it again to my panel. Larry Stein, you're in Oklahoma City. Okay, here we are. Donald Trump had some big run-ins with members of the press during the primary debate, Republican primary debates. Of course, we all saw that. And now in the presidency, we saw fireworks right away over the weekend with Sean Spicer chastising the press for their reporting on the inauguration, asserting that it was the biggest on earth. And so is it, do you see a problem here, Larry?
Well, on Lindsey Graham's comment about the elections, those happens in states where they encouraged illegal aliens to vote, to sign up, register to vote. We don't know. When you're trying to compare what happened with Al Gore 30 years ago, we don't know what's happening in those states, and they're usually controlled by Democrats. And if they're controlling the election process and encouraging illegal people to sign up and vote, then I think there could be corruption, but I don't think there'd be any will at that state level or at that local level to investigate any of those illegal aliens who are voting.
But Larry, there's no evidence of that. I mean, Donald Trump is saying millions of votes illegal along those lines, and everybody who's looked into it has said, no, that has not happened.
I don't know if they have, because
they have.
They're looking at an independent voice. I mean, you've got the Secretary of the Elections in California saying, oh, no, there's not a problem at all.
Ginger Gibson, everybody that I'm seeing reporting on this is saying this has been disproved as an issue on this scale. Now, Melissa in Terre Haute calls in and says media bias. But at the same time, Ginger, we've got to have reporters out there asking what's actually happening, don't we?
So to the woman in Terre Haute, I would assure her that as a member of the national media who has covered the campaign and now the administration, I'm not taking directions from anyone on my narrative. That's not happening, and I don't know anyone who is. I think that there's a lot of criticism that we're seeing. You know, you look at something like this question about illegal voters, it's really difficult to prove a negative, but we can look at the Pew Research Center, which has done a number of studies and come back and said that there isn't rampant voter fraud. A number of bipartisan groups. We look at the state of Georgia, a Republican-controlled state that came back and said they couldn't find evidence of voter fraud. Those are facts. You know, it's difficult to make an argument when you say this, you know, I'm proving this didn't happen. No, it's not there. It's the same when we talk about crowd sizes. I was at Barack Obama's inauguration in 2009. I was at Donald Trump's inauguration last week. I was at the march on Saturday. I've covered all of these events, including a number of other large events on the National Mall. I can tell you what I've seen with my own two eyes. The problem is that now the attack is that they can't trust what I tell you I've seen with my own two eyes, and that I'm not to be believed. And that's what we're struggling with as an industry, I think, right now.
Larry, what do you say?
Well, but they never said there were more people at the inauguration watching the event. They said there were more people at the inauguration and watching it streaming on television and live on their telephone.
Well, I've actually read very closely. He said it was the greater both. He said both. And now, I don't know about the streaming, but on the mall, it was. And the president said, you know, that there was an underestimate of what was on the mall when he was at the CIA, and that turns out just not to be true.
And I'll add this. You know, what happens in these cases is that Sean Spicer got up there to criticize the photos, the pictures that one of my colleagues took at 12:01 at the inauguration. And he did so by then saying, well, people also watched online. Well, you're criticizing people for tweeting photos and then you respond by saying also online. Those are not the same things. And that's a distortion. And that was why we saw so much pushback, because the argument was that reporters were misrepresenting what was on the ground, and that just wasn't going on.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Relationships are important. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and Blue Apron makes cooking together fun and easy. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. So join in, get the family together, and choose your meals each week. They come to your door with pre-measured ingredients so you can spend time with your family and not at the grocery store. With the simple instructions, everyone can help prepare the meal. There's no risk. Get your first 3 meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com. cnn.com/onpoint.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking with Donald Trump supporters, President Donald Trump supporters this hour, about how they see the opening days of the Trump administration, how they see the way forward. You can join us, Trump fans. What do you make of President Trump's opening moves, statements? 5 days in now, what do you think of the Trump trajectory? Trump critics, what do you see? Yvonne Raskowski is with us from Joplin, Missouri, voted for Donald Trump. Denise Moe's here from Indianapolis, Indiana, also a Trump voter. Larry Stein from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, also supporter of Donald Trump. Ginger Gibson's with us as well, covered the Trump campaign, has talked with a lot of Trump supporters over the months and more now. Larry, Denise, Yvonne, lots of callers for you. Kyle in Fort Lauderdale. Kyle, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom. As an Iraq war veteran, my concern is the war with ISIS. And I want to see Donald Trump support the Kurdish Peshmerga forces and send less aid to Baghdad. We're supporting the Shia militias, the same Shia militias my unit was fighting against 10 years ago. And they're discriminating against Sunnis on a regular basis, and it's just exacerbating the sectarian conflict in the region.
Kyle, did you vote for, if I may ask, did you vote for President Trump or no?
Yes, I did.
And what's your concern now, or what's your issue?
My concern is I would like to see the United States support the Kurdish forces more than the Shia militias that seem to be committing war crimes against the Sunni population. And it's these war crimes that are making the Sunnis, that made ISIS look like a good alternative to the Baghdad central government.
And you think the U.S. should work more closely with the Kurdish Peshmerga? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am.
We've got it. Larry, are you paying attention to the ISIS front, and how do you hope or expect Donald Trump will, President Trump will pursue his view, that vision there?
Well, I don't know, but I know that he's going to have some great help through General Mattis and others who have military experience and know the background of what's going over there. I think one of the things that brings up is the issue of the being able to screen heavily those people who are entering the United States. And if we don't, you know, there are critics that say, well, you're looking for Muslim tests. No, it's just that the Muslim terrorists are the only ones. We don't have any Baptist, Presbyterian, or Catholic terrorists that are trying to destroy America. So,
well, we certainly had mass murders here that were not committed by Muslims.
That's true, but the ones that have a deep hatred and have a religion that at least some of those followers that want to kill their opponents, that's not usually found in any other religion except the Muslim extremists.
Well, I don't really know that we can say that. If you look around, there've been plenty of conflicts around the world where Christians were deeply involved. But Denise, on this front of clamping down on immigration, from the wall to tougher restrictions that are being considered right now, an order that may be coming that would block visas issued to anybody from Syria, Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Yemen. How do you feel about all that, Denise?
Well, as a whole, we have well over 300 million people in the United States, and we have a lot of people here that need jobs, that are food insecure, that need education. I honestly think I'm more of a closed borders person. If I welcome immigrants, absolutely, if they can contribute to our country, if they bring something to the table, if it would be a benefit to America, I don't at all feel that it is wrong for an American president to put America's interests first and only let people come over that would be a benefit to our country. We cannot save the whole world. It is the American president's job to benefit the 300 million people already here.
Where did your family come from, Denise, if I may ask?
Sure. I am, I believe, fifth generation half Greek, and then probably, 15 generation English. So we are absolutely all immigrants, but just, you know, the flood. And, you know, we have children here in the foster care system. We have people, you know, below the poverty level, people unemployed. You know, I have no problem saying that we need to put Americans first and America's issues first before we can help people from other countries.
Yvonne, there in Missouri, what about the wall? Donald Trump is talking a lot about it this week. Do you think it's going to go up? Do you think it'll be different from what we've seen so far on the southern border?
I think it should be different than what we've seen so far. I believe in legal immigration 1,000%. My background is I'm actually Hispanic, and the other side of my family comes from the Mayflower, so I guess you could say I'm the original immigrant.
Yeah.
But I'm for legal immigration. I think the wall should go up. I think we should control who comes in, just like every other country does. It's very difficult to immigrate into other countries like Canada and Mexico. If you look at their laws and how it is, how difficult it is to become a citizen, we just have an ole way to go. You can just come through the fence and all of a sudden become a citizen, and I don't think that's right.
Well, I mean, you're not a citizen by walking over, right? Donald Trump's
talking. They get all the rights and abilities of a citizen, though, don't they? They get to work. They get to
Well, they don't vote. They don't vote, of course. I mean, they don't have that right. Oh, we know.
It's very easy to get a driver's license. It's very easy to get identification.
Not even that necessarily. But certainly, it is true that millions are in this country, and so you're for the wall. Put it up. Make it stronger than we've seen.
Make it follow the laws of immigration. Follow the laws of immigration that we already have on the books.
Yep, we got it. Anthony in Detroit. Anthony, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask the supporters of Trump of what they think about how he promised to drain the swamp, given that, in my view, his cabinet nominees, he just kind of made the swamp thicker and deeper with CEOs, lobbyists, congresspeople, and other people that are totally, in my view, unqualified to run their departments, such as Betsy DeVos for Education.
I'll put it to our panel. Larry, let me start with you. Are you, if you were in the drain the swamp camp, do you see that happening with the Trump cabinet? Are you satisfied with the way he's come into Washington and its interests, his cabinet nominees?
Yeah, I do. My relatives met the boat, and I live in Oklahoma, and I've got a guy named Scott Pruitt, who's our AG here, and he's going to be a great EPA guy, and he's going to help stop some of the corruption that's caused by EPA guidelines that force companies to have to try and work through the Congress to change the laws and make that a corrupt system. The EPA's kind of come out of its shell and gotten too big for its britches, and we need to put it back into the size that it needs to so it can promote the economy and still keep clean air and clean water. But it's gone crazy across the country, especially in agricultural regions like Oklahoma.
I mean, I know you've got a lot of energy production in Oklahoma as well, but what about the environment and climate change? People have not been real outspoken on that front in this quadrant from the Trump administration. What about it, Larry?
You know, I think that Scott Pruitt is going to be a great guy because he cares about the environment. We come from a state where you have to preserve the water. We have because we have oil and gas production, but we also need that oil and gas production to be able to fuel the economy. And I think that when you get people from all walks of life that don't have to go make a $1 million because they've already made it and they've been involved in the swamp and they've had directed people to work that swamp, they know how to drain that swamp better than somebody who's been in government for 25 years.
Yvonne, I don't know if you follow this, but do you really think Scott Pruitt's going to be strong for the environment and strong against climate change with his background? He's been certainly not seen that way nationally out of Oklahoma.
He's not seen that way nationally. I think he's far more balanced. Anybody that's not absolutely green is seen as being absolutely wrong, and I think Scott Pruitt is a better balance.
Tyler in Gordonsville, Tennessee. Tyler, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a couple comments here because I do grow up in rural America, and we have a lot of agriculture around where I'm at. I believe that the panelists that he's picked for, or sorry, the head department heads of state that he's picked for his cabinet are the right people for the job. I mean, they don't have to worry about, you know, being bribed. So they're
several are already rich.
Yeah, there's no sideline agendas there to be made. So they got plenty of experience in their fields to help guide the area with their department.
Now,
as far as media goes,
yes,
I believe that the media should be more neutral based because we got to admit during this election that the entire time they was praising the Democratic Party while I don't want to say hurting, but definitely slandering the Republicans left.
And you just see it as simple as that. What about when reporters are out there like Ginger Gibson trying to find the facts and share them with the American people?
Well, I don't mind reporters actually trying to find the facts or reporting that they might have a lead on a story, but I think before they establish the story itself, there should be actual factual information to report.
I mean, get out there and get out there on the facts. I agree with you on that. I mean, we heard Lindsey Graham saying to Donald Trump, settle down on this voter fraud talk this week. It was Lindsey Graham saying, look, pay attention to governing the nation. Republican Senator, South Carolina.
I would urge the president to knock this off. This is the greatest democracy on earth. You're the leader of the free world, and people are going to start doubting you as a person if you keep making accusations against our electoral system without justification. This is going to erode his ability to govern this country if he does not stop.
Lindsey Graham there with advice for the president, or almost a plea. Larry Stein, you were saying earlier that you hope the President Trump will focus more. Where would you like that focus to be or not be, Larry?
Well, I think that he needs to focus on the economy. He needs to focus on making our borders secure and having legal immigration as a key element, and then developing our economy, as well as protecting, you know, one of the chief things that happens in the Constitution, the preamble to the Constitution, it talks about the securing our borders and making us safe in our homes, and that the rebuilding of the military and the prestige of the United States around the world, it has been destroyed over the past 8 years, and we need to fix that.
Why a stronger military, be more militarily powerful,
military and leading for freedom around the world, instead of letting folks that are the bad guys and supporting them and trying to figure out if they can fix things in certain regions.
Yeah.
We need to support the good guys and get them done. And I know they talk about the one guy's good guys, another one's terrorists, but I think we can figure out that we know who's who in the Middle East, and we ought to be doing a better job and work with allies to settle down certain regions of the country as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, Larry. I don't hear Donald, one word I have not heard him use much is freedom. I mean, he says a lot, but freedom is not a word that I hear often from him. What do you think about him working so closely or talking about working with Vladimir Putin? Are you happy with that or not?
Well, yeah, I am, because for the longest time, the establishment in the State Department may just be protecting their job, saying, well, these Russians are really bad. But when we're looking at the two major superpowers that want to fight terrorism and secure borders around the world, I think you have to cooperate with anybody who can work with you on certain issues.
What about freedom? You can't look to Russia as an example of freedom.
But when you create a better world and a safer world, that's when freedom can prosper. And I know Russia's got some problems, but, you know, overall, they're one of the people that because of their non-freedoms, maybe they can do some things to terrorists that we can't do because we have a lot of freedom.
Boy. Okay. Amos in Charlottesville, Virginia. Amos, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. I was wondering if any of the panel could explain why Trump hasn't released his tax returns and if there's any good reason not to.
Good question. Denise, would you like to see those Trump tax returns? How do you understand the fact that he has not released them?
Well, no, I cannot explain why. I'm not his accountant. I'm not a member of his family.
Sure, he's president of the United States now. You know, presidents for many decades have put those out so people can see where their interests lie. His interests are rather large. We know that. Should he put them out there?
I trust him that he has put his business interests in other people's hands and that he will be fair and he will be equitable. You know, I think people are entitled to a semblance of a private personal life. I think, you know, being president, he could have done a lot more relaxing, you know, better things. I think being president, I think he's truly in that office because he loves America, to put the American people first, to get us back on the right track. He's not doing it for himself or for any self-interest. He's there because he loves America. He wants what's best for our country. He deserves a personal life. He's been a successful businessman. He's a good negotiator.
But he's got the most public position in America now. Yvonne, should we just be expected to trust the president? Is there some reason that he shouldn't share his financial background like other presidents have?
I think it's the American people's job to question the president. As you said, he's not a monarch. We are not to bow down. We hired him. He works for us. He should be more forthcoming. I was under the impression that they were held up because his businesses, one or two or whatever, were being audited. However, that's why they were not released, and they would be released upon completion. But it is our job to question the president, 100%, regardless of what party the president's from.
Yeah.
Larry, would you like to see those tax returns?
I want to see the if there's no statutory requirement for the president to provide any of that, you really wouldn't see anything except income. But I would like to see the financial statements of some of the reporters in Washington, too, to see where their interests lie. If you want to have full disclosure, we can do that.
Well, but, I mean, it is the president of the United States. Yeah, he's the most powerful guy we've got here, and every other guy has done it. You think?
No, they haven't. No, they haven't.
Presidents have done it for something like 40 years.
John Kennedy never provided his income taxes.
Yeah.
So why should we have to have Donald Trump do it when there's no statutory, no legal requirement?
Well, maybe just so we see transparently what the leader...
Transparency. No, the reporters would be dogging him for years, talking about connections that they think or they're trying to establish that would dog the presidency. Mm. That's what it's all about, to create controversy.
Mm. Well, that's one way of seeing it, and it's yours, and we've got it. Denise, are you optimistic as we head into this new administration's time?
Oh, yes, I am. I am holding on to my hat. I'm excited. I think the future will be better for my children, finally. I think he's uniquely positioned to bring about positive change to our country, to do things that other presidents were too afraid to do, were too indebted to special interests and lobbyists to do, and his heart's in the right place, and he is uniquely positioned to bring about change, and I'm very excited about it.
Yvonne, if you could give any advice to President Trump as he sets off here, what would it be?
Do what you said you were going to do. Bring back jobs to America, bolster our economy, close up the borders, be the president you want to be.
Larry Stein, your advice to President Donald Trump?
Get the military back in action, lead freedom around the world, and become a leader that will be thinking about who was Ronald Reagan again?
We'll see what path we get on here. It is great to hear from you all, and I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today from around the country. Denise Moe in Indianapolis, thank you so much for joining us today, Denise.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Larry Stein in Oklahoma City, thanks for joining us, Mr. Stein.
Been terrific being here. Thanks, Tom.
And Yvonne Reskowski in Joplin, Missouri. Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Reskowski.
Thank you, Tom, very much.
Ginger Gibson at Reuters, national political correspondent there. Let's talk again soon. Thank you very much for riding along with us today, Ginger.
Happy to be with you and looking forward to the next time.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.